Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
This podcast is where we put the real in PEI real estate. Pretty catchy, eh? Still getting used to that.
Yes. No, I like it.
This could be considered, if you're new to this podcast, your best resource when you're looking to buy or sell real estate in PEI. If you're new to the show, Patty and I offer over four decades and thousands of transactions handled combined. So we have a full-time background in PEI real estate. There's no self-promotion. We're trying to be as transparent as possible. And the only goal here is to help buyers and sellers of real estate in PEI. And for that matter, anywhere in North America, because it's basically all the same thing, isn't it?
Yes, the principle behind it all is pretty much the same.
So big news, our Facebook group is alive and active, 335 members last time I checked a couple days ago. We've changed the name. If you do want the best Facebook group to enlighten you on PEI real estate, be sure to check out moving to Prince Edward Island, spelt out with Michael and Patty. Maybe you can highlight the other stuff that's going on with the group and we'll get started.
Yeah, so some of the things, one, we ended up changing the group from a public to a private group. That was to ensure that there was no solicitation. I have had a few people reach out to me, direct message, and just really wanted to be a part of a community, Facebook, social media community, that they could trust to be able to get the information and they're not going to be hounded. So we ended up making the decision to make it private just to ensure that we are fulfilling that request. So it is a safe haven. There's no harassing you to work with us. That is not the objective and goal. It is an extension of our podcast here that you're listening to, just to make sure that if there's anything you missed or you're looking for summaries on podcasts or links, all that information is going to be made available. Plus, also, we feature a Toolbox Tuesday, which gives you tips on the whole moving and selling process. So every Tuesday, there'll be something featured there, which you can easily go back and just do a search at the top and be able to find moving with pets. There'll be something on that, schools. So this is all just being created. And as time goes on, it will be hopefully a great resource library for you. Plus, we've also put out in this last week, looking for, again, trying to fulfill the needs, what people are looking for and whether they wanted candid videos. We had conversations whether we should be putting properties, listings in that YouTube. And I know, Michael, you call them 24/7 open house or virtual.
We're calling them a candid video now. So basically, the difference is it's an agent, typically in this Facebook group, Patty or I, walking through a house. But it's not one of these fancy artistic videos where you get a corner of the tap and a shot of whatever. This is an agent walking through the house, getting in to the nitty-gritty, including the water heater, the breaker panel, well pumps, expansion tanks, all the stuff that makes up your house that you should know about if you're buying a house in PEI.
Yeah, and an extension of that, we felt perhaps it might have value, and this is going to be a project that we're going to be working on going forward, is, you know, just videos of your subdivisions, typical home prices, maybe some of the amenities of different subdivisions and communities across Prince Edward Island. That's going to be a bit of an undertaking. But I think, Michael, you and I would be able to start putting something like that together to start showcasing so people understand and know what they're getting, especially buyers who are relocating to PEI.
So there's all kinds of reasons to join the Facebook group. Again, look for Moving to Prince Edward Island, spelt out with Michael and Patty. We'll also be covering rules, regulations, realtor code in upcoming episodes of the podcast. So you know more about what your rights are and what your agent should be doing when you're working with one. Our first topic today is I had somebody up west. And for those of you that don't know up west, where's up west, Patty?
It's western portion of Prince Edward Island.
West of?
West of Summerside.
And where's down east?
Down east is east of Charlottetown.
So if you're traversing on the island, it's up west and down east. This particular question came from somebody up west. And what they said to me is that property you just listed a few weeks ago, I'm surprised it sold and there's so much attention. So, to give you the background, I listed a piece of acreage up west that was on the water. It was priced at market value. I did video and pictures and all kinds of great stuff, nice description, marketed the property. We had one offer, and I've got a list of a number of people that are now interested in this property. So this potential buyer said to me, they said, well, I'm surprised it sold so quickly. We're used to properties sitting around forever. That's no longer the case up west or anywhere in PEI if the property is attractive and if it's priced right. So those days are gone. The moral of the story is if you're looking at a property, you like it, it's priced right, it's priced at market or below, and you're interested, write that offer now. Do not sit on the sidelines and think that you're going to buy it for a discounted price 3 years down the road when it's still on the market like it used to be in the past.
So I have a question for you, Michael. How do you know the property's priced right?
You are dealing with someone like you as an agent that educates them. You've got them set up with a Paragon or a real-time search so it pops up on their screen instantly. And you phone them and you say, hey, you're looking for 10 acres on the water and a white sandy beach with a paved road on the back. You can subdivide into 10 lots. I found it. It just came up a few seconds ago. You should have it in your email. Lights right up an offer.
Okay. And I agree along with you. Just, again, if you're a listener and you're wondering, is this price right? Should I jump at the property? Just the very fact that you're even contemplating it is probably indicative of that. But I would be, there's the value of working with the realtor, having a custom collaboration site, having great communication with your realtor, and being able to say, can you quick and do a reverse CMA? I think this property is the one. I'm okay with the price. I want you to let me know if you feel that it's priced properly. And it doesn't take too long, especially since the price is already out there. It's a little more difficult sometimes to do a CMA where you're starting at ground zero, trying to figure out where does this property fall and you're starting from scratch. You've already got an anchor set out. This is what the seller is feeling the property is worth. So the realtor shouldn't have too difficult of a time doing, again, what we call a reverse CMA comparative market analysis to let you know and do it in a timely manner so you can get an offer in and you don't miss out.
The other thing I would look for preemptively if I did have an agent that was representing me on this property, and you can let me know if this is a good idea, is number one, on this show, we always advocate dealing with an expert, someone that has 10,000 hours of experience, which works out to 5 full-time years, 8 hours a day, and someone that's done 1,000 transactions. In addition to that, and let's look at this like we're looking at a property in Ontario, I look at a house in Niagara Falls, and I'm talking to an agent that lives in Oshawa, and I'm asking them to give me their opinion on this house in Niagara Falls. That is sort of the same thing that happens in PEI. This particular property was located near a major center for up west, per se, major tourist attraction. I know the area of that island like the back of my hand, as does Patty, so we can advise people on that specific area. But there may be areas that we can't. So if you are dealing with an agent and asking their opinion about a property, you should have an agent that understands 100% what that area is all about.
Yeah. Have you sold properties in that area? How familiar with that area are you? And these are questions, again, as a buyer, you should be asking, and as a seller, so that they are assisting you in making sure that they price your property, because part of the formula, the equation of selling a property is price. Price can be so important. Now, price can fluctuate, and that's a whole other episode and podcast topic, but they should be familiar with the area.
And another reason they should be familiar with that area is because the market sales data, the statistics that they're going to use to form an opinion on this property, the data is thin. So they're going to start pulling data from properties that are a long way away from that property. And if they don't know that area, it's going to sound like a compelling argument, but they may be in much better areas.
Yeah, or they're going back too many years because it is so thin.
So this plays into our next question. So this person said, I love this property up west. I want to offer on it. I said, it's already under contract. And her question was, well, can I offer them more money for the property and get it?
That's something that I've been asked, and even recently a few times, I've been asked.
Maybe
it
was the same person that called you because you didn't hear the right answer.
No, I doubt it. So, very good question. It's under contract, whether it's got there's conditions still in play, or even if it has firmed up and they're waiting closing. Buyer, and it's a valid question, can I offer more money and bump that buyer? Well, the short, quick answer is no. Once it's under contract, that seller or that buyer has that property secured. Now, if that buyer, let's just say, was looking at purchasing it for an investment, maybe a couple years down the road, it was just something they wanted to get secured, you might be able to buy that contract that gets a little bit more, there's a little bit more involved there in disclosing information and who the buyer's agent would be and that kind of discussion. But the quick short answer is no, that buyer. So if you're a buyer and you have a property that's secured and under contract, I don't want anyone to feel stressed that, well, someone can come in and just bump me out. The answer is no. You have that property secured. It's under contract. You have a binding agreement of purchase and sale. So you should be able to walk that property to closing.
So let's just say, hypothetically, I'm Joe Blow, property seller, and the purchaser happens to find me because it's PEI, meets me in the grocery store, says, hey, I see you sold your property for $100,000. I'll give you $150,000 for it. So I, as a property owner, what do I do next? What documents do I look at?
What documents do you look at?
I'm going to look at the purchase and sale agreement and see if I can get out of it.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be a possibility. Typically, if you're a seller, though, the buyer is the one that makes that decision whether that contract's going forward.
If I'm a property seller, and this is just a hypothetical situation, we're not going to get into the ethics of things, and I sold a piece of land for $100,000, and Joe Blow, purchaser, his name's the same as mine, we're both Joe Blow, he comes along, he says, I'll give you $150,000 for that property. I go to my lawyer, say to my lawyer, I want to sell this property to this other Joe Blow because I'm getting $50,000 more. The lawyer's going to look at the contracts and see if they're valid. Because a lot of times, you know as well as I do in real estate, particularly on the island and more rural areas, sometimes the contracts are pretty loosey-goosey and people didn't sign when they're supposed to sign, or maybe they didn't sign at all, or there's certain timelines that weren't met. So basically, at the end of the day, they are advocating, well, if the buyer wants to buy and the seller wants to sell, the contract's going to go together. But in this case, the vendor's going to look for a way out, which is why Patty and I always say, make sure your contracts are 110% perfect.
Yeah, you have to ensure that you adhere to the timelines within the contract agreement, because in the situation that we're discussing right now, Michael, yes, there could be a situation where somebody is trying to get out. You don't want to get sloppy at all at any stage of the game, because your property's not sold and you haven't bought the property until the money exchanges hands.
So what Patty was saying, basically, you could essentially buy the contract off the purchaser, but you would have to have mutual compliance with everyone involved in the contract with respect to the purchasers and the vendors.
And the other thing I was going to say is to find out what's to say, unless the seller, running into your grocery store situation, Michael, but the public. So if you're a buyer and you put in an offer on a property, and using Michael's example, you secured the contract, the property for $100,000, no one else is going to know what that property, what your contract is, your agreement of purchase sale, unless you talk and tell people.
What about the MLS once the conditions are removed and it's marked sold?
Well, no, once the conditions are removed and it's marked sold, the price is still not disclosed to the public.
Only when it's closed.
As soon as it closes and the money exchanges hands at midnight that night, our MLS system will flip the property over to reveal what the purchase price of the property actually was. So just something to be mindful of. We can't disclose what that price is anyways. So a buyer would have to guess or assume, and they would have to have conversation with the listing agent to, you know, say, well, I don't know what the property sold for. I would like to pay 25,000 above, or again, once it's under contract, we usually here on the island keep it pretty clean and simple. And there's plenty of listings and pieces of land, and there's about 1,200 of each actually right now.
So if I'm a purchaser of a property and I'm a speculator, I'm going to take this property and sell it tomorrow or 3 years down the road, what textual content can I have in that purchase and sale referring to the buyer's name or names that would help me so I can take that contract and commoditize it and sell it to somebody else prior to conveyance?
Oh, you would put in, let's just use Joe Blow, and or assignee.
Right. So if you're a speculator and you feel other people are going to want this property and you want to be protected and you don't want the permission from the sellers, although they're probably not going to be very happy about it, and I've been in this situation, make the contract out for your name or names or assignee, then you can actually, as far as I know, lawfully sell that contract to somebody else, assign it, and then they are now the people that own that contract without issue. This is also done when people are buying contracts in their personal name and then put it in a corporation that isn't formed. And there's a number of other reasons. The negative to this is if you're getting a mortgage, banks do not, and a lot of them will not, allow an assignee to be on the contract. Well, I think we've beat that subject to death. It's time to move on. Agents, how many agents have called you up and bragged that they sold something off MLS?
I do get a handful.
I get this particularly in commercial real estate, and it was just a few days ago an agent that was bragging that he sold a whole pile of properties off MLS. And to me, it's sort of like I'm selling something. I've got a used drone because I've just bought a new drone. So I put it in my garage, I put a for sale sign on it. I don't really know what it's worth or what I want for it. The neighbor comes along because it's been sitting there for months and no one's offered to buy it because it's in the garage, and he offers me $100. I know that drone is probably worth, after talking to people, probably $2,500. But $100 is my best offer. Do I sell it to him? Well, it's my only offer, so I've sold it to him. This is what happens a lot of times when you sell things off MLS. They don't enter into a competitive bid situation like I was putting it on eBay, for instance. eBay is almost guaranteed, if it's a product that people want and there's a demand, to drive that price as high as possible. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So when you brag about selling a property that's not an MLS, you're basically bragging that we really didn't have a competitive process, unless there's some non-MLS auction or something as a function of the sale. Typically, when seller A sells it to buyer B and there's no competitive bid, you don't really know the true value of that property because it hasn't gone to the real estate system, which I would consider a reverse auction, because you're typically asking, in most cases, more than the property's worth, and you're hoping someone's going to settle on that price or less. Sometimes you'll have multiple offers and it will drive it over ask, but typically properties are going to sell for less. But negating the fact that it's on MLS, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. And not only have I had this conversation with an agent, but I've also had this conversation with a seller where people have been driving this seller crazy trying to buy this one property off him. And I said to him, why aren't you putting it on MLS and advertising it to see if there's any other demand out there?
Yeah. And the only reason I could see somebody feeling like they don't want to have the property on the MLS is because they've already got a buyer. They have a buyer who might be a family member, a situation like that. No other situation, in my opinion, would warrant going the route of an exclusive listing with an exclusive agent who can only directly market your property to a person. They're not allowed to put no mass emails, no drip campaigns, no newsletters. It can't be featured anywhere. It can only be marketed directly. You are 100% missing out on, like you were referring to, Michael, the competition bid, or to try to find out what that property's true value is by offering it to the masses instead of one person.
You were in a car and you overheard a conversation where an agent was trying to solicit one of your property owners to get the listing. Little did this person know you were listening to the whole conversation because he didn't ask if anyone else was in the vehicle. And it was kind of funny to listen to this story. Maybe you can tell us something about it.
I was the driver and I was just driving my client back into town in that. And because I provide high-level service, apparently, a lot of times.
This is that 1961 pickup truck that doesn't have a legal safety and the frame's cracked?
No. I was in the vehicle with my client. She received a call. She made the decision, nothing to do with me and nothing about setting up anybody for failure or anything like that. Just her style is all I will say. And it turned out that it was one of my colleagues in our industry who started asking, and I did find this fascinating, Michael, which is why I shared it with you.
As did but, I.
Yes. Started to ask my client a series of questions, and every question was a yes answer. Basically, are you looking to sell? Yes. Did you want to sell this summer? Yes. Do you have a price already in mind for your property? Yes. Everything was a yes. And then he said, did you want it on the market, you know, by this date or before the end of this particular month? Now, this was a little bit ago, but, and her answer was yes. And he said, basically went in for the close and went to schedule the appointment. And then, of course, she started to giggle a bit and she said, actually, my realtor who I will be working with is sitting right here with me, so I won't require your services. But set now, if I wasn't there, I don't know how they would have responded. Maybe out of curiosity, got them to do a CMA themselves and seen. But I was there. But it was an interesting strategy. It is a negotiation technique to ask a series of yes questions and then go in for the close, which is securing the appointment. And now you've just got another listing.
A good lawyer says never ask a question in court that you don't know the answer to. Those are all good questions. The only question I think would be the giant hurdle, in my experience, is do you know what you want for the property?
And she did answer yes.
But in most cases, what are they going to say?
I'm not sure yet.
They all say, oh, I have no idea. That's why I'm calling you. I have no idea what it's worth. In 100% of those cases, what is the fact?
They have a number in mind.
They always have a number in mind.
I will, if I can just add, just to close that little bit of the conversation, this agent was a true professional. He did kind of snicker a little bit and he said, you know, in a very polished professional way, I didn't mean to, you know, interrupt your day. I am sure you are in very capable hands. I look forward to seeing it when it is offered on the MLS. And I will definitely keep it in mind should I have a buyer that might be interested, which I thought, what a nice way. Didn't just, you know, get short or anything saying, oh, okay, well, that's
hang
great.
Up
hang
on
up.
Them.
Yeah. Like,
call
them
so a bunch of names, hang up the phone.
If you're listening to this and you are familiar and you know who you are, kudos to you. You handled that conversation like a true professional, which is always appreciated.
Without getting into sales training, absolutely 110%, that person handled that really well. Because what's going to happen? When agent number one doesn't sell it, they're going to look for another agent. Who they're going to think about it? The yes man.
Yes.
And then they're going to kick you to the curb. Patty's out the door.
Let's hope not, but I understand.
The other day, Patty raised something with me where an agent made the statement that she was unethical in writing an offer on a property that the purchaser hadn't actually touched and seen in person. And my response or opinion to Patty was, the purchasers can do what the purchasers want to do. And if you have a client that wants to buy a property sight unseen based on pictures, video, surveys, perk tests, environmental studies, and the list goes on, they're certainly welcome to do that. Do I advise them to do that? No. However, you do have clients that are wealthy it may be a $500,000 or $600,000 or $50,000 purchase, is a very, very, very small part of their portfolio or their net worth. And some people, I've had people buy properties they knew were absolutely completely worthless swampland, and it was disclosed. They bought them just to say, I own something in PEI. So having said that, this other agent insisted that you could not sell a property that they did not visit in person. And you responded how, Patty?
I did have an agent show the property, my assistant. So we did technically, I did show the property, or the buyer did have the opportunity and did view the property. We just worked together and I wrote the contract agreement on their behalf with the consultation of my assistant for any extra additional insight. So I've had also in the last month another client of mine who ended up putting in an offer because they're very anxious, and when they decide they're going to do something, they immediately just go ahead and run and put in offers, and it's just who they are, and that's okay. I just want to make sure they're properly serviced. I did get to go out and view this property. Didn't see the property. Agent didn't see the property. Buyer didn't see the property. He is now in this home. He is not pleased with his purchase. It is going to require quite a bit of money. Asked my opinion whether or not this property could be flipped back out. And based on the condition, he wouldn't be able to break even. It's going to take a couple years for him to even break even. And my advice was to do all the work. And I said, I would have ensured you I had viewed it. And I gave you my advice. So it can work against you. You need to be very mindful of what you're purchasing. I will say it is in our provincial rules and regulations. Our rules state that before a member may complete an agreement of purchase and sale, the member should, where possible, physically view the property. So it is
That's pretty
shell.
Loose.
I realize that. So I just want to make sure I do cite, it is in our rules and regulations that we shall, if possible, make an effort to do so. But I do feel a buyer, they should look at the property.
At the end of the day, can you buy a property you haven't seen? Absolutely. Is it recommended? No. So what the agent should be doing that's right in the offer is they should write up, Patty?
A waiver of recommendation.
So you're going to write up a form as a purchaser's agent that said, I've suggested you view this property in person. You said you didn't want to against my recommendation. So we're going to move ahead anyway. Hope things work out for you. And that's why we have the waiver recommendation, which should actually be used for a number of things, home inspection, surveys, lawyers review, whatever, perk tests.
And in some ways, I think pumps the brakes. It protects the real estate professional in the process because they are able to say, I advised you to do this, and it's a recommendation, which is part of our agreement of purchase and sale. You chose or elected not to. However, it may pump the brakes for the buyer to realize the intensity of what the decision that they're about to make may be. If they decided to just go ahead and remove the home inspection or subject to viewing, it does maybe make them feel they should take this a little more seriously, and maybe I'll just slow down a little bit.
The other day I walked by an agent, an experienced one, writing an offer, and in that offer, in the inclusions, this is a paragraph that says, what do I get with the property? What am I asking for? An example, it might be fridge, stove, washer, dryer. In this particular case, it was a commercial property, and this agent that should remain nameless.
They all are nameless.
Put in there property to be provided turnkey, at which point I said, that's not a legal term. You shouldn't be using it because it really doesn't mean anything. And of course, they argued it a little bit, but turnkey is not a legal term. If you Google this and you look it up on all the law sites, it says it's a real estate term used for marketing. Plain and simple is what they say. Turnkey more commonly spelt as one word is used to describe a property that is move-in ready, no repairs, updates, or heavy cleaning needed. You walk in, you turn the key, and boom, you're home. In this case, it was a commercial property. What are your thoughts on using the words turnkey in a purchase and sale?
In a purchase and sale, I don't agree along because you're absolutely right. Turnkey could just mean that it's in immaculate condition and you can just move in and start living or
operating the business.
Operate the business. Not that it includes all the chattels, all the content. And I also would recommend against selling a property inclusive of all chattels because it can complicate financing for that buyer. But
without getting into that, if you are going to ask for something turnkey, don't use those words. What I would say if I was purchasing a business, let's say it was on a piece of land, I would say everything in the structure or structures and on the land are to be included in the purchase and sale, including and not restricted to or limited to the following items. So the big things that I wanted, let's say there's a dump truck and a lawnmower, I'd put pictures in there, attach them as an appendix. I'd want the serial numbers, maybe the hours of operation. You can never over-document these things because sure enough, the things you forget to document down the road are the things that are going to bite you.
Yeah, and I would say whatever the shortest list, if we are going to be including chattels within a contract agreement, whatever the shortest list is, what are you taking or what are you leaving? And that is the one that needs to be spelled
out. Well, that's
a
different subject. But if you want certain stuff, like you want the Kubota lawnmower and it's orange and it's worth $15,000 and it has 90 hours on it, just don't put end lawnmower.
Correct.
Because I've had people, you show up and it's a green John Deere that's 30 years old with 50,000 hours on it and it's ready for the junkyard.
Or swapped out a fridge.
Or swapped out a fridge or an oven. That's why it's nice to have pictures, even if they're not attached to the purchase and sale, although they should be. At least you have reference so you don't think you're losing your mind. Like that fridge we saw yesterday in that home with the beautiful plexiglass cover. You could see all your stuff inside.
Yes.
Well, you know that's something someone's going to possibly swap out and replace it with an old white $200 fridge, right?
Yeah, because it says that it will include
a fridge.
And
I've had this argument with lawyers and they'll say it said a fridge. And they're correct.
I also
kind
have,
of.
Okay, is a tree considered a fixture?
A tree?
Yes.
Well, then we're not going to get into this because it's a long conversation.
Yes, I'm setting you up.
What's the definition of a tree?
I am setting you up.
Is it in a living room?
It was miscommunication.
Oh, wait a second. I know. It's one of your new listings where it's growing through the dining room floor.
I will just say it was all cleared up, but it brought an entertaining, interesting conversation where it was my interpretation of the list of chattels that were to be excluded was to exclude all trees. Well, part of the charm on this property was that it was mature trees. So we were a little confused, and I happened to just have the lawyer on the phone, and I said, we're still kind of going back and forth with regards to chattels, because one of the items listed was that they were taking all the trees. And he had pointed out that trees, because they're affixed to the land, stay with the land.
Oh, absolutely. Common sense sort of dictates the trees do.
I realize that. But it was an interesting discussion and conversation because some people do feel they reserve the right to go and remove all the plants. You know, they want their hostas.
Are they going to roll up the front lawn like they used to do years ago in Florida when we had the big problem?
Yeah, I've had people go back and take the plants out of the gardens. They are technically affixed to. So just something.
That's why I said this was a long subject.
Yep.
First, you usually start by defining the words.
I agree. But we were talking about turnkey. So
when vendors say that an appraisal or a CMA, a comprehensive market analysis, which is what agents do, appraisals are done by appraisers, and they come in low and I sold it for more. So there's like a ha-ha, you know, they told me it was worth this and I sold it for more. The ha-ha is kind of irrelevant because the agents should, and the appraisers are, looking at what has sold. And sometimes that data is all over the place, but they try to form opinions based on market data as to what your property is worth. It's not or shouldn't be their opinion as to what it's worth. It should be the market's opinion. So when they look at a house and the market says it's worth 500 grand, but you have a neighbor next door that just won the Powerball in the States and decides to buy the house for 700 grand, that's not a case for HaHa. It's good for you. You found a buyer that didn't care about the cash because you just won the lottery. He was acting on emotion, liked your property, wanted more seclusion and privacy for his. That doesn't mean the appraiser or the agent did an improper job and you pulled something over them. It means they supplied you with scientific data, or should have. You just happened to luck out.
And I agree. And we've seen this in the past.
Especially with COVID. You'd see houses for, the market would say it's worth $450 and they sell it for $950. That's beyond our control. The point is the appraisers and the agents aren't doing anything wrong. They can only deal with cold, hard facts, not whether or not someone's going to win the Powerball next week and just cut a check for whatever.
Yeah. So it really isn't an aha moment.
Aha.
And
Okay.
It is just saying that, and again, it's not my number, and it's not that I'm saying your property is only worth X, and here you ended up getting Y. It has nothing to do with that. I feel, and I'm sure majority of all realtors out there feel, that the only thing we can pull from is the data on the MLS and provide sales that have passed, and say, based on the sales that have passed, that have done in the last 6 months or a year, the property's location and that, and how far back you have to go in order to get comparables, this is what it is stating your property market value should be. And we give ranges. We don't give numbers, but that's not our number. That's just what the data is saying. A seller can pick any number that they want and say, well, I disagree with the data. I feel my property is superior, which you hear every single week that their property is superior.
Yes, I heard it as late as yesterday.
Yeah, and we hear it all the time. Every property is unique and different, and I appreciate that, and I'm not dismissing anyone's homes. However, we just go based on a general, here's where the market says it can afford. Now, if you put it on, you don't listen to your realtor, you price it higher, that's fine. Just know you might be going through a series of negotiations with yourself in the form of price reductions until you find that sweet spot.
Have you ever written an offer, an amendment, whatever sort of agreement, and there's a time delineation on it? It basically says you're removing a condition that expires today at 5 o'clock. But you're in a panic because it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You need the husband and wife to sign off, and they don't do it until 8 o'clock that night. So technically, as per our earlier discussion, this contract has been breached. What can you do to unbreach it, Patty?
So the contract is going to need to be rebinded, and there is
rebound.
Rebound.
Rebound. Rebinded.
I don't know. The conch, you will have to insert.
My money's on rebound.
Okay. Rebind the contract where there is going to need to be a clause inserted stating that both parties acknowledge that it is past the condition time period, but accept that this contract is still valid. That if you're doing an amendment and your client didn't sign it prior to 5 o'clock, and have that sent to the listing agent time-stamped before, because most of our clauses, I just say five, are usually due on this date by 5 p.m., it needs to be time-stamped and in the seller's agent's email inbox so that they can go ahead and get it signed. It should be within the timelines. If it's not, you're going to have to bring that amendment back to the buyer, insert into the amendment this additional clause that rebinds the contract agreement, have all parties sign. Again, like you had said earlier on in this episode, Michael, If a seller is looking for an out, here is a prime example of an opportunity to get an out, is to say, well, I'm sorry, but I was under advisement from my agent that I had no choice but as to sign this. It turns out the deal was dead, and now I can sell it for $50,000 more. So make sure you adhere to the timelines as they are spelt out. When you hear that phrase, time is of the essence, this is what they're referring to.
So I have a client that every time they sign a document, it takes them a week. I automatically just put in there, this contract is to be considered enforced and still active. And then I don't care when they sign it. The vendor may care, but I don't care because I can only get them to sign as fast as they can sign. But if you have that clause in there, even if you think they're going to sign a couple hours late, it will keep the contract bound, or as Patty puts it, binded. So it's still enforceable. Next. You had a training session with your agents last week, and you covered the exciting topic on Cubicasa.
Yeah.
Is that Spanish?
I don't know. It sounds very Spanish.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So Cubicasa is an application that's typically used on your phone or iPhone that will allow you to walk around the room. You follow the walls. You do a video of the house walking around the exterior walls. It gets sent to the cloud and like magic, it comes back in the form of a house plan. It also gives you the square footage measurements and everything else. They'll even do a 3D drawing where you can walk through the house and push a little button and it will bring up the pictures your photographer took. Really quite cool. Have you used it at all?
I haven't used it yet. We are just introducing it to our team. I know one of the agents was pretty anxious and wanted to do this on their home just as a test run. I liked one of your tips and advice that you had given with regards to this. Now, if you're a seller and you want to set something like this up, you pay per...
It's $30 US.
Per floor plan.
For most of the stuff.
Yeah, you don't have to pay for a subscription is what our preliminary research has told us. But,
no, you get one free.
Yes.
And then it's about $30 depending on the options you pick. But regardless,
per
it's
project.
Very cost effective.
Yes, you pay per project is all I'm trying to say. And it should be something that it used to be really difficult to try to get floor plans.
Well, I started using it because you get into these houses that you have to be a mathematical genius or a professional mathematician to figure out how many square feet are in the house. And it becomes so complicated that some markets in the States and Canada have just removed room measurements and square footage and just said, you want to figure it out, you're the purchaser, you figure it out. But what Cubicasa does is allow you to walk around the house and do these measurements. One thing, I learned three things. Number one, don't use a phone that doesn't have LiDAR, because I used that first and it wasn't accurate at all. I used my iPad, which does have LiDAR, which is basically, my understanding is it's a light radar, LiDAR, get
mm-hmm.
it?
Yes.
And it was much more accurate, but it is not 100% accurate. So I would not use this as the holy grail per se, but I would use it to reconcile the measurements you've done with a laser, because they're usually bang on if you're doing it correct, and apply it to these room measurements and the drawings, and then you have a pretty decent finished package.
That's what I was going to say. I liked your advice where you input the measurements into the floor plan just for a higher level of accuracy. Absolutely. And what I like about this also is there's always sellers that will say, when I bought the property, it had 2,300 square feet, and you're telling me now it only has 2,100. Did it shrink? And it's because measurements, we could have 12 different agents measure the exact same property, especially if it's not a square, and come up with 12 different property dimensions, square footage calculations. It just depends. Are they using the imperial? Are they using decimals for their room dimensions? There's a whole bunch of variables, but I do I do like this whole idea, which is why I wanted to introduce it to my team, Michael. So thank you.
You're welcome. What about the Dewey Decimal System?
Okay. Included. Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, Prince Edward Islands podcast that helps guide and navigate buyers and sellers through the buying and selling process and a little bit of everything else in between about PEI. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening, and even the realtors that are listening. I've had some really positive feedback from them as well. So thank you. And if there's anything that you feel we've missed, any corrections, because again, we can come up with the content stories, but sometimes they can go down rabbit trails. And we want to make sure that we are providing accurate data and facts, which is why I try my best to cite maybe some rules and regulations, which I think in the future episodes Michael and I discuss, we're going to start inserting some. So again, thanks for listening.
Have a great day. Be sure to follow the show, give us some feedback and 5-star rating. And that's it for now. Over and out.
Have a great day.